We're in there. I think we're in there.
All right, here we go. August.
Whoa.
August. Summer's over, man.
May it's the done. August 2nd be with you, right?
It's never been funny.
It's been funny every time, getting funnier all the time.
What are we doing here? Is this like a podcast about video games? What's the deal with games, man? That's what I'm trying to figure out. That's what I'm trying to share with the people.
Can I start off the podcast since you asked the magic question, what is the deal with games? I want to say that lately I've been thinking to myself, really, what is the deal with games? And by that I mean, like, I'm frustrated with so many games at the same time. Like every game just at the moment just feels like it's not all the way where I want it to be in a lot of cases. Like, Hearthstone's getting the new expansion, but I don't give a shit about it because it's Hearthstone and the cards mostly look bad.
Isn't that a good thing?
What?
Isn't that a good thing?
Yeah, I guess so, but I kind of want a card game. I want Hearthstone to be good. I don't want Hearthstone to be bad.
What? Elder Scrolls now available on mobile.
That was me slurping my Earl Grey. Overwatch, my game 2 years in a row, even though it didn't even launch in one of those years. It is in a weird spot. It's not like a miserably bad game or whatever. It's not even a bad game, but it's in a weird spot where the updates are coming slow. Like, Summer Games just finally got announced, and that's coming out August 8th, which is kind of late in the summer. And there hasn't been a lot of additions to the game. It's weird looking at the current state of Paladins and Battleborn. You remember that love triangle? And, like, Paladins... Battleborn is dead as shit, but even then, Battleborn got more updates. It got more characters, I believe, and, like, more maps and modes and stuff than Overwatch
has
gotten.
I don't need another shooter.
What?
I don't need Overwatch right now. I don't need that. Good. I'm glad. Put Overwatch on the shelf for a while.
Why? Because you got PUBG?
That's what I'm about. Yeah, I got Battlegrounds.
But I still love Overwatch, so I'm kind of in a weird position right now where...
I can wait. I can wait for Overwatch to be all that it can be. I've got other stuff to do. If a game needs more time in the oven, good.
I don't know. Like, because I want to be playing it more, but it's been weird. It's been weird choices from the Blizzard team to keep adding more offensive heroes and heroes that play offensive when there's only really like three healers in the game and one main tank. And it doesn't matter when you add a character like Doomfist, because I can't play that character anyway. Because I'm going to... people insta-lock him.
You could just play Heroes of the Storm, where characters are added every month.
Yeah, Heroes of the Storm is one of the games that I'm not including on this list of games I'm kind of frustrated with.
What about Tekken?
Tekken I'm kind of frustrated with.
Oh, what happened with Tekken?
I don't know. Other than, like, weird matchmaking problems and stuff, I've been frustrated with the concept of Tekken since the launch. Like,
I understand what you mean. We're both here.
What?
We're both here on this Tekken issue.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing a little bit of BlazBlue Central Fiction and playing a little bit of Guilty Gear, which are both games that, again, I'm like, what's the deal with these games? Why are they so half great and so half I don't want to play them ever? But with Guilty Gear, everyone talks about how good the Guilty Gear trials and challenges are, and that they do a really good job of teaching you. And I even used that as an example without really like knowing too well exactly how good they are. But I did do some of the trials in Guilty Gear recently, and like, the trials are so incredibly good that they're teaching you like stuff that you'd have to go find online. Like, they're giving you all the secrets, and like, they're telling you like the secret input, the best way to input stuff, even though like they could obscure that like every other game. So it kind of frustrates me when I look at that, and then there's Tekken, it has zero attempt at all to teach you anything. Like, there's not a mode that is like, here's the correct way to Korean backdash, and then there's going to be like a proper inputs for it and like trying to teach you to do it more properly or time it more properly and stuff. There's not a mode that teaches you like the best combos. There's not a mode that teaches you like here's how to start reacting to snake edges and stuff like that, and here's how to get used to, here's like the most unsafe strings in the game. There should be like a mode that is like, that is like, we're going to keep hitting you with different, we're going to keep like cycling characters and they're going to hit you with really unsafe combos that have like lows at the, in the middle or end of it, so that as long as you react to when the low is supposed to hit, you can parry. So it's like, to pass the mode, you're gonna, you would keep playing and cycling different characters until you parried, until you kept parrying their lows.
I'd like be good at that mode.
What?
I'd be good at that mode.
You there? You are, you would be good at that mode. It just, it, it's frustrating that Tekken has to obscure so much stuff, and that it that first of all, like, it's weird that Tekken got the pass that Street Fighter didn't. Street Fighter V came out, it came out with like no tutorials, no trials, poor online mode, poor optimization and stuff like that, and Tekken has basically all that except for it's like, it's better optimized. It's had to have many patches to fix the online mode that is like really wonky.
Treasure Battle
sucks, actually. Treasure Battle actually makes the game worse.
People who don't play fighting games don't care because they've got Treasure Battle.
I hate Treasure Battle. And the other thing is that it goes hand-in-hand with how horrendously bad the customization is. I think the customization in Tekken is, like, truly outstandingly awful.
It's obnoxious. It's obnoxious that it's in the game.
There's like, 20 or so, you know, tops for guys or girls, and they reuse all of them all the time. So it's like, here's the leather jacket. Here's the leather jacket on a different character. And they all look bad because for the most part, they didn't skin it properly. So if you look at like, if you look at shirts, they made the shirts like look so thick and weird on the body because, I don't know, they didn't make like, it's not like fine tuned for that character. So they just have to like put a big shirt mesh over them or something. So like the customization sucks. You can only make a goofball character. There's like, everyone likes to share like, oh yeah, but I made a Dragunov Solid Snake. Like, you aren't a clever, go to hell, you aren't good, you're nothing.
I mean, my real problem with it is just that it has all of these really obnoxious effects that like swirl around people's characters and just make it harder to see like hit animations. And yeah, the fact that you can like use this stuff in ranked,
I feel like there's a lot of,
you is miserable.
I feel like there's a lot of things you could do. For example, you know how Steve Fox has those big gloves? I feel like it's really hard to pay attention to what he's doing when he wears the big gloves, because they're all over the place while he's attacking you. It's like, it's important to know, more importantly, like where his arms are going. But then like when he's like whipping these big gloves around, they look stupid and it's so hard to follow like what he's trying to do at you. Like the, and then you're right, like all the auras and swirly shit, and then the like weapons, like Dragunov's stupid little tank and stuff like that. Like, it's not that I'm losing to them at all, actually, more just that they're like visual clutter in a really weird way and they don't add anything. They're really just kind of annoying. I feel like in ranked mode, at least, you shouldn't be allowed to use certain things, especially like the auras and stuff like that, because I think a lot of times it just looks really obnoxious and it's like hard to pay attention to what the character is doing when they're clouded in this like weird flat 2D flame that comes off of them.
Annoying.
Yeah. And then Final Fantasy 14 annoyed me this recently because I just was starting to get more like bored with the end game and the end game of MMOs in general, that traditional MMO endgame where you just keep grinding dailies. And I decided, because for a long time in the back of my mind with Final Fantasy, I thought, I'm doing all the PvE and I like the PvE and I think it's very good PvE. So the first time you do it or the second time you do it, it's still pretty fun, and then it starts getting boring. But I've always had in the back of my mind, like, well, maybe I get some gear and then I go to PvP, and I never tried out PvP, and it almost made me like stay in the game more, because I always thought like, man, but what happens when I try out PvP? What if it's really good? And the answer is that it was not very good, and it almost like disheartened me so much, because it's always been this like secret sub reason in my mind to get me to keep playing that game. It's like, maybe at some point when I'm really bored, I'll check out the PvP, and then that'll, you know, make the whole experience better, and it doesn't.
Sad.
Sad.
But I guess, like, now you're in this privileged position of maybe you can find something new to play, and maybe you have time for it since, like, these other games aren't getting in your way.
I mean, I'm still playing. Just, like, I'm playing tons of Tekken.
Yeah. Or you could read. You could maybe get into, like, a long book. Maybe, you know, just read a bit, then come back to gaming once you're a little bit more into it.
I was also another game to add to this list was Gigantic. Have you played Gigantic at all?
No.
Do you know anything about it? Did you listen? Yeah. You listened to last week's podcast, I assume.
Yeah, and I know about it. It's similar to Super Monday Night Combat.
Okay. Gigantic is pretty good. I might end up playing with a friend of the show, Ryan Galloway. Thank you, Ryan Galloway, and Crying for the use of your music. We use the intro and outro, Revive, off the new album, Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at the Run Forever Bandcamp after this is over, because he's been wanting to play Gigantic. He's been actually playing that for a while. And for the most part, it's like, it's another one of those games that I'm mentioning where it's doing a lot right, and it's in, you know, open beta, so it has a lot of time to fix things. But I feel like it is really hectic and cluttered. Like, if you are talking about how you're getting annoyed with like particles and Tekken, I don't know if it's the same like one to one here, but there's a lot of like, it's third person actiony, and there's a lot of particles and a lot of like crazy stuff, and it can be sometimes just like super hard to follow for a second, and then you're dead. Like, when a bunch of enemies jump on you, just a million things are going off, and it's like there's no chance to like figure out what's going on or why that happened. It's also a game that, like, it's frustrating because it seems like it steamrolls either one way or the other, where one team instantly starts doing better and they play better and they try harder, and then one team is losing, and like I've been on both sides of it, and it's like when you're on that losing team that, like, either you just have, I don't even know what it is, always it's like poor teammates, poor team composition, lack of understanding about overall game mechanics and like how to play the game, for whatever reason, it's like it becomes apparent immediately, and then you end up playing like another 15-20 minutes in this totally unwinnable, sad, slowly slipping away game, because I don't know if there's much of like comebacks. Always, like, they keep getting stronger quicker, they're getting more of the talent system, they're building more of the creeps, they're getting to attack your throne and everything, so it can be like kind of, it's always felt very one-sided to me every time I've played.
I don't know if I need that in my life.
Yeah. I was having the weirdest problem with Tekken. Like, I don't know what you would know about this, or like I had to try so hard to find out more about this, and I don't know if I fixed it. I might have, but my Steam kept, like, I was having this problem kind of across every client platform, like Steam, and a little bit of Blizzard. Mostly the game that would be affected by it would be HOTS, and not really, other games weren't too affected by it. But I was getting these like mini disconnects a lot. And I thought it was due to packet loss, and then I had to call up and found out that it was like there's no packet loss at all, so I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was trying a bunch of different things, and like port forwarding and trying to move around the router to get it in a better spot. But then eventually I checked on my like USB adapter, and it was showing that like the signal strength and quality link weren't that good. So then I hit renew IP, and then for whatever reason it's been higher since then.
Nice.
I don't know what that meant.
Sometimes it's better to not ask. Like, to just accept that you fixed the problem.
Like, maybe I fixed it? I don't know. Like, I'd have to play extended Tekken to see if I did fix it. I don't know. Those are my six, that's 16 minutes of me yelling. We are the info wars of podcasts, of video game podcasts specifically.
Why is Galloway into Gigantic? Now.
I don't know. He's a big Overwatch boy. You know that. He's always been a huge fan of Overwatch. So I think the idea of like Gigantic has a lot going for it on the outside. It's got really creative, clever characters. It's got I think it's got like an excellent art style, and it's really early in. There's lots of clever mechanics that, like, they're doing a lot of like miniature things that I think are like incredibly smart. Like for example, you know, every game these days has to do daily login bonuses, but the way that they do the daily login quests is that you get to pick from like a tarot deck, like a tarot deck, and it'll show you options, and you pick the option for the quest you like the most, and you can like reroll them, and you can use in-game currency to buy rolls to find new quests, to buy more quests, and there's cool stuff going on with that. I really like the way that they do the matchmaking, where you get to pick up to 5 characters. So if there's a character you're like 100% set on playing, you could only pick one character, and then it'll take a little bit longer to find you, to definitely find you a game with that character. But if you're kind of like all over the place, or it's like you want to play support or ranged or melee or something, then you can pick up to 5 characters that you would like to play in the next game, and it'll find a game for you with one of those characters. And if people on the team don't pick the other characters that you chose in that like little roster, you're allowed to switch before the game. So that's a really cool thing. I like the idea of it's like hot style, or even like Battleborn, I guess, style leveling up talent system. It's a little better and more creative than Battleborn, I guess, kind of more on the HOTS end. So there's cool stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff going on. It feels overall pretty good, just like very hectic, like impossibly hectic sometimes. I don't know if that's just early on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want it getting into my Heroes of the Storm time though.
I can't wait for Garrosh. He looks really cool.
So, yeah, I don't know. I've been kind of all over the place. I've mostly been, I mean, Path of Exile's in 2 days, and I know that once Path of Exile comes out, mostly just gonna play Path of Exile. So mostly what I've been doing is I've been just planning out some different builds for Path of Exile. I've been, the patch notes came out today, 14,000 words, tons of buffs. Everyone has always been sort of like making fun of GGG, creators of the game, Grinding Gear Games, as sort of saying that they only ever nerf things. And I actually think that there's tons and tons of buffs in the patch notes that I'm really excited about. They buffed a lot of, like, not just damage, but damage types, where they've made shock and freeze, or rather shock and chill, more effective, which opens up just a lot of different pretty much choices in terms of, like, what skills and abilities you can use. They reworked damage over time completely. So poison, bleed, and fire, ignite specifically, have been reworked. A lot of people are complaining because they don't know what's going on. One issue that I run into.
How did they rework them? Isn't there kind of only like one way to do bleeding and
burning?
Well,
no, because the way that they scale is different. The way that moves and different modifiers interact with them is different.
Okay.
So one example of this would be that, and this isn't like a one-to-one example, but there's a modifier in the game called weapon elemental damage, and they modified weapon elemental damage to be attack elemental damage. And now that it's attack elemental damage, it scales with ignite, because previously weapon elemental damage only applies to a hit. So it's like it's kind of tricky to explain, but what I'm saying is that, like, under the hood, there's all of these different things that go into determining how bleed, poison, and ignite are now calculated, that sort of open up new avenues for builds and avenues for when and where you would use certain types of things.
Okay.
That's really exciting. And one issue that I do have with the Path of Exile community, and this is especially on Reddit, so now I actually get to call them out, is that they always think that they're better at balancing the game than the developers of the game are.
Oh, yeah. So that's specific to only the Path of Exile Reddit community. I can't imagine naming a single other community that thinks that they balance the game better than the devs, but
definitely not. But you know what I mean, right? How the content isn't even out yet. They don't even know they don't even know all the items that are being released yet, because they haven't even revealed them yet. But people still think that they know better than the people who like have made the game and spend all day looking at the game. And to be fair, I'm sure that some of these people spend all of their time looking at Path of Exile as well. But the people in New Zealand developing the game have developed a livelihood around that. That, and I'm always more apt to trust the game developer than more often than not. So I'm really excited about some of this stuff. Some people are apprehensive about some of the changes. Some people think that there are skills that are outdated that need some attention. That I can agree with. There are skills that have been around in Path of Exile for a very, very long time. But GGG kind of takes a Hearthstone approach to that, where instead of fixing an old thing, they'll just build a new thing that does it better. The only difference is that in Path of Exile, you're not paying. So there's a skill called Incinerate, which has sort of been outclassed by another skill called Scorching Ray. They're not exactly one-to-one things, but people complain that Incinerate is useless, but at the same time, Scorching Ray is awesome. So if you really want to play Incinerate, you sort of do have an option. And even though it's not 100% the same thing, you can just play Scorching Ray and it's fine. And at the same time, like I totally understand why they wouldn't want to rebalance practically every skill in the game when they're overhauling so many major systems and introducing so many major things that it would maybe be too dangerous to do all of these things at once. So it sort of makes more sense to put these new systems in place that are majorly overhauling the way that some of the damage works. And then once they figure out where when the dust settles, where everything falls, I think it's a little bit easier from that point to then go and maybe re-examine lightning tendrils or glacial hammer or things like that. You can't do it all at once.
I think we've been hot and heavy on this. Has been the most video games on topic podcast we've ever had. For the last 25 minutes, we've both been yelling about video games. Some of it, much of it, probably confusing.
But I'm super excited for that. I'm also playing Warframe.
That's Friday.
Still? Yeah, Path of Exile is Friday. I'll be working from home that day. I'll definitely be working.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Warframe also is pretty good. Not much to say about that. Warframe, you know, the gameplay of Warframe doesn't really change that much the more you play it. I did get an Archwing, which is this sort of device that lets you fly around and do like these sort of like outside, like in space missions where you're sort of just like cruising around. I don't know if I like that as much as like the actual running gameplay of it as much. I also do love how like every weapon in that game is a side grade and there's just like so much stuff to work for. And I really think that Warframe works because the moment-to-moment of it is so good. It's funny because I actually think that the game that Warframe is the most similar to is like Path of Exile.
Yeah.
I think it's disingenuous comparing Warframe to Destiny because Destiny is more a tried-and-true shooter, whereas like Warframe is more similar to like Dynasty Warriors where you're just like mowing through people pretty much.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like mowing through people at lightning speeds. I understand the Destiny comparison, especially in terms of like the setting, but outside of the setting, like I don't think that it's really very fair to compare Destiny to Warframe. I've also been playing Splatoon.
That's fun.
Splatoon is just like a super chill, relaxing game. And it also like, it sort of scratches the itch of like, here's a shooter I can play. That's like, I don't know what other shooter I would compare it to. Maybe the thing that I would most compare it to is like a game like Halo or a game like Destiny, where it's like you have your character, you jump into multiplayer, you're just chilling and playing a few rounds. Maybe you unlock some things, you progress your character, and that's pretty much it. So it sort of has that sort of flow, I guess, of like Halo or Call of Duty, where you play some, you unlock some stuff, you have some good rounds, some bad rounds, and you can sort of just forget about it.
Did you play any more of that Salmon Run?
No, I didn't. But it looks cool. It's like their take on a horde mode. The style is really just everything for me in Splatoon. I really like that it... You know, most games I play are pretty like edgy and grimdark. Especially like Path of Exile is just... You could really cut yourself on that edge, but Splatoon is sort of on the other side of that spectrum where it's...
You don't want to cut yourself with that Path of Exile edge because then you got to go get a shot. You gotta go get a tetanus shot because it's just rusty and nasty.
Well, there you go. And yeah, so Splatoon is sort of the opposite, where it's like kind of lighthearted. The music is really awesome. The style is good. It's just like kind of fun to exist in that world. So I dig that. I dig just having that to like look at. And I've also been playing like the single player and stuff like that when I'm on the train. So that's cool. It's nice to have a game on the Switch to play.
What do you do when you're on the train? Are you playing online or are you playing story mode or
Salmon? I play the story mode. Yeah.
How is that?
It's fine. There's so much cool stuff in the story mode in terms of like the ways that you move around maps and the way that you explore things that I sort of wish they took more advantage of in the multiplayer mode.
Okay.
Where they have like all of these cool rails and stuff that you can ride on, and it's.
I think I know what you're saying. You're saying design. Because I was watching that Splat. I really liked this. There was a Splatoon speed run at ADGQ this year, and it was really cool. And there was a lot of creative stuff going on with moving platforms and what you're talking about, like rails that you could like grind on and stuff like that. So it seemed like you could do cooler stuff with the maps instead of like, you know, a skate park that you're just controlling. Like I think there should be like more intricacies and like moving parts and stuff like that. But I don't know. I digress. I haven't played enough of that game to really to be a Redditor right now and just say what the game needs. I think that the Splat dualies are somewhat underpowered, but too powerful against the roller. So my best patch would be I would nerf the damage by 5%, but then increase the speed at which it reloads by 15. That's what I would do.
Thanks, Reddit.
You're welcome.
We did it.
Reddit. We did it, Reddit. And my axe.
It's Wednesday.
Yes. Is there significance to that?
Wednesday, my dude. That's all I got.
Okay.
And that's the deal with games.
Oh, my God. This is. I feel like when we get into something that's not just rapid fire video games, I'm going to have to edit it in front of the video games, because that I feel like we are supposed to do the interesting stuff up first and then you do the boring shit after that, and we did the boring shit first, and now I don't even know if we're gonna do the interesting stuff.
What's interesting?
I played that Call of Cthulhu game with you.
Oh, Pandemic.
So my thoughts vis-a-vis Pandemic were that the game isn't very I think that it's like just like any board game in the beginning before you've played a round or so, you're kind of confused by mechanics, but once I played a few rounds and like when we were, you know, shortly after we got into the game, I felt like the game was like too simple. And I also don't really feel like it had that much to do with Cthulhu. Like, nor do I feel like you get to make that many interesting decisions in a lot of cases. Like, it's a game where it's got cool ideas, because it's like there is this board where there's lots of different places to be. There's like four different towns, and each town has a summoning portal, and you're trying to make sure that you're trying to close all four summoning portals before Cthulhu awakens and before, you know, Shoggoths, these like little creepy token men's, try and get into the portals. But the acolytes are weird. I feel like there's not good mechanics around them. Like, they're these like little tokens that go all over the place, and they're only really significant when you run out of them, you're making too many of them. Or the game is making too many of them, or if there's four on one spot. But for the most part, it felt like we didn't have to really travel that much as a group, which is weird. It felt like we should be, you know, maybe it's like I have to play Betrayal. Is Betrayal the same type of game, or it's very different?
Not. It's a totally different thing.
I feel like the way that I've heard Betrayal explained, that's the one that has the haunts, right?
Yeah, Betrayal is more of a story game where it's like, it's as good as the group you're playing with. It's one of those games where it's like, if people get into it, it can be really good. But if people like don't care very much or or you get a haunt that you don't particularly like, it can be kind of divisive in that way. But overall, it's probably one of my favorite board games.
Yeah, we should have played that. Because I just felt like there wasn't a lot of like creativity to the turns, because everything is, for the most part, everything is governed by sheer randomness. Like, you have to, like, after you make your turn, that's when you draw two cards to have. And then friend of the show, Ryan Galloway, I'm not saying it again, kept getting the evil stirs, the bad cards. So, like, the game seems to, like, take... The game, like, lurches forward when you draw the evil stirs cards, but it has nothing to do with, like, a failure or a mistake. And then after that, you draw cards that put acolytes in places, and that's another thing that doesn't really... that is, like, completely random and has nothing to do with making a mistake.
The evil stirs cards are not in random spots. That you divide the drawing deck into four parts, and then you spread them throughout, so they're always coming at around the same time in a game.
Okay.
So it is sort of like you could never draw them as your first four cards, for example. They're spread out in a way, and of course there's randomness, because if there weren't, the game could be solved, right?
No, I don't think that there's... I never have any problem with randomness. I'm just saying that, like, your choices on a turn seem like largely governed by the randomness of the resources, and then also, like, how your team is doing seems somewhat governed by, like, when, like, if you're in a good situation to hit the evil stirs cards, or what the old gods are and how you deal with them and stuff like that. There doesn't seem like there's a lot of options. Like, the, like, you as a player, like, your choices are, like, move or fight a thing on a space, and there's no getting stronger, there's no, like, rolling for that kind of stuff. Like, you just use points to win or not win, which isn't even losing. You just go there to, like, kill the thing that's on the space. And you don't, like, group up with people or, like, make decisions with people. Like, the only decisions we ever had to make, or the only, like, real important conversation we had to have, was about, like, who would close a portal and, like, giving the, like, whatever, the sigil kind of things over to them to make sure that they would close the portal. Do you disagree with me that it's a game that doesn't have a lot of interaction? Like, it doesn't have a lot of choices?
I don't know, because we played on the introductory difficulty, so it's hard to say. And even on that introductory difficulty, we came very close to losing. And also, a lot of people wasted their turns and did things that were totally pointless. But I didn't want to direct everyone on what, like, the ideal turn would be, and I'm not, like, as well-versed to know what the ideal turn for it would be. I also know that Pandemic is, like, a pretty well-celebrated game, and that people like it a lot. I don't think this variant really changed much about it.
Maybe that's why I have the weird
feeling. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say. One thing that I really want to check out is there's a game called Pandemic Legacy, which is a board game that you play over several sittings, where you're permanently it's pretty much like a campaign, where you're playing it in different chapters, where you're pretty much like, the difference is that in Pandemic, you're trying to save the world from a disease rather than save the world from, like, a demonic invasion.
Sure.
And in Pandemic Legacy, there are things that you do that permanently alter the board state and the state of the world for every time that you play the game moving forward. The downside, I suppose, if you could call it that, is that the game has a definitive ending to it, which maybe some people like, maybe some people think that's kind of lame.
What do you mean definitive? Like,
you beat the game. Like, you beat the game, and also you've changed the board state in such a way. You're actually manipulating pieces in the game to permanently change them to reflect what has happened during the playthrough. So once you're done with the game, that's it.
Wait, you can never play it again? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because you've permanently altered it.
What? I don't understand this at all.
So the idea is that you play this on, like, maybe like a weekly basis, and you always play it with the same exact group of people, because all of the actions you made are doing the same thing going forward. It would essentially be like repeating a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, right? Where why would you ever repeat the campaign a second time?
I don't think I understand what you're saying. Like, what exactly are you manipulating to make it so that you can't
I don't play the game
in its regular sense again. Like,
but I know that you're permanently altering the like the actual physical pieces.
That's what confuses me. Like you're like it says stuff like it's like break one of the pieces, melt that piece, put the piece in put the piece in the microwave, and if it's
tear cards in half.
Oh God,
that is part of the game.
Yeah, that's what I imagined is like destroying cards so that they don't come back again and stuff like that. But why would one thing
that's mysterious is that there's one card in the box. I don't know what it is because I want to play this game. I don't want it to be spoiled. But there's a card in the box that it just says it's in an envelope and it just says do not open.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense because wouldn't you just not alter it in a destructive way? Like the game tells you rip a card up and then you're just like, okay, I'll put you back in the box so I could play it again from the beginning.
I also want to caveat this by saying that there is two versions of the game, Pandemic Legacy Red and Pandemic Legacy Blue.
Which one would you get?
There's absolutely no difference between them. There exists two boxes just so that you can play the game with two different groups.
But
because you can't, because it's not a transferable thing.
Did they not understand that you could have bought another one of the same color?
You could, but maybe you wanted a way to differentiate.
Okay, so yeah, they carry over to future games. I'm so interested in that.
I know. Something about that is so cool. And in a way, I mean, seems pretty unique to this. I haven't encountered anything else, any other board games that do something like this. But at first, I wanted to make sure that I understood the core rules of Pandemic and figure out, is this something that I would want to pursue? Do I think that this game is something that people could have a vested interest in? And I think that I could be. I do like the core game of Pandemic enough that I would check out Legacy.
It says, according to the website, it says, can I replay Pandemic Season 1 after I'm done with the campaign? And the answer is, the game was designed to be played 12 to 24 times. Players have been typically getting about 16 to 18 games. Some users have gotten creative, however, after finishing their game. Possible spoilers.
Yeah, so what it's saying is that you repeat the game over time, because those are like the different chapters of the game, essentially. I don't think it's saying that you're necessarily replaying the game once you've completed it.
Holy shit. How much is this? Let's get into this. I gotta see this shit. October 8th.
We'd have to figure out, I think it's like $55. But the primary question is, can we hang out on a regular enough basis that it becomes viable to get this game that requires so many playthroughs?
I mean, you only need to do it like once a week for a couple weeks, right? And then after that, it's just you're putting 60-minute play time isn't too bad to do like a couple runs a day, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But it's a cool thing. I mean, I wanna see, check that out. It's also the best reviewing and most popular board game out right now.
What is the most popular board game?
Pandemic Legacy.
Really?
Yes. That's how I found out about Pandemic and got interested in it. There's an aggregate website called boardgamegeek.com.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now, actually.
So it has the top ratings on that site for the reviewers, that is. So the reviewers consider it to be the best game.
Well, hot damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked, we're in that weird board game resurgence along with everything else that's resurging, like theater and TV shows and stuff like that. But
games, right? These last 2 years have just been pretty good, huh?
I guess so. But I mean, I didn't feel like they went anywhere. But maybe they did. Maybe you could call like.
You don't remember when everything that was released was broken? Remember that?
I mean, yeah, okay. And then I also, do you remember when everything was gray?
I do.
We had to go first. I mean, you know, there was good stuff in that era and stuff that I'll remember forever. But like, maybe, you know, a harbinger of problems to come was Gears of War. I love Gears of War, but it's like everything after that was big and bulky and gray and just gray for years after that, you know? And that wasn't good when everything was gray. And then after that, everything was broken for a little while because developers figured out that they could just patch things afterwards. And then sometimes they didn't. And now we're here. And now we're here in a year that has many still broken games, but it's not as big of a deal. And we're better off for it. We have Breath of the Wild, and we have
That game Persona. Wasn't broken.
It had a shoddy frame rate, but hell no, it wasn't broken.
They patched it pretty fast.
Yeah, but that didn't solve everything about the frame rate. The frame rate wasn't, like, super solid after that. You know, Breath of the Wild, I have been thinking more and more about. Do you have, like, I have, like, a weird nostalgia building in me now where whenever I hear the word, even just the words in a row, Breath of the Wild, I remember, like, the awesome moments of starting that game, and then about 80 hours afterwards that were unbelievably good, and then maybe 10 or 20 hours after that that were just good.
I don't know. I don't really feel the same sort of nostalgia for it that I feel towards other games that I've even played this year.
Would you say that when you're looking back on it, like Persona fills you with more happiness than...
Yeah, I would. I would say that.
Goddamn, I still got to finish that. And I have, you know, not put any time remotely into it.
When I was playing Persona 5, I was waking up early. Like, I would play it for an hour, 2 hours before work sometimes. And I don't know any other game that I really have ever wanted to do that with. There's just something about it.
It lends itself very well to that, right? Because yeah. you could just have an idea of, like, I kind of did that as well. Like, I would do the more dungeony stuff at night when I knew I had time before I was going to go to sleep. And then in the morning, I would wake up, and it was like, since I did the dungeony stuff last night and I made good progress, I can do in the morning the more, like gearing up and doing side stuff. And
that's like how the game itself is set up, right?
Yeah, like literally that.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's also something to playing that game in, like, the winter time, where it's, like, kind of dark out. It's kind of dreary. And I just, you know, have the sound of that game ingrained in my head. Just the sound of sitting in the cafe.
Oh, like, it's so good, the soundtrack.
In the cafe. So it just captures a mood. And Breath of the Wild also captures a mood, but it's a totally different sort of thing.
You know, maybe I was thinking about it, and it's like, maybe my frustrations with current games is that, like, I haven't, like, I got so spoiled in the beginning of the year with Breath of the Wild and Persona, and I'm, like, currently, I don't know, like, which of those dukes it out for number one, but it's like, but I did finish Breath of the Wild, and I didn't finish Persona, and that has nothing to do with Persona. I should finish it before the end of the year. But those games came out rather close, and I don't think there's been anything like it that is, like, gotten me really, really excited. And like, I've been playing Tekken a lot, and I like Tekken, yeah. But it's,
you,
like,
know what game I think has a shot though? Super Mario Odyssey.
You think so? I thought it was Destiny.
Real hot. Oh, what? Destiny doesn't Destiny, even count. Destiny is like a drug. Destiny, like, it's like a drug, so it's kind of not the same thing.
You're saying
it's like hitting. It's hitting different parts of my brain.
Yeah, you're saying it's like, you wouldn't ask a heroin abuser's review of heroin.
Yeah.
Destiny, we were talking about it recently, but I think another reason why I'm getting, like, impatient with a lot of current games is, like, this big shadow is cast where I just keep thinking about, like, well, don't worry about finding a game they're going to put 1,000,000,000 hours into, because Destiny's coming, and it's on PC, which is kind of the only thing I've ever wanted, so.
Monster Hunter is also going to be on PC. This year, but man, PC getting some love.
Is there anything else? Like, I can't even think of, like...
How's The Long Dark, Ryan?
Well, yeah, I did download The Long Dark. I didn't play that much of it, so I would be a terrible... terrible person to explain how The Long Dark is.
So,
but
why did you decide to get that? Because that game doesn't seem like something you'd ever be interested in.
I think that answer number one, I'm always a wild card. Answer number two, love the art style, super cool, kind of like it looks like
it's like Firewatch.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the name of that game, Firewatch, with like the, it's very painted and like you know, Walking Dead, the Telltale games look like this, like it looks like everything is like painted over. I like that a lot.
The thing about Firewatch is that you haven't played it.
Did that come out this year? That came out last year.
Yeah.
I own it. Do you know that? And I have it downloaded. I should play that.
Short game.
Yeah, so The Long Dark is a survival game that has like two kind of like main modes to it. It has a story-based mode that is like guided and mechanic, like teaches you mechanics and stuff, and you get to, I haven't played any of it, so I can't really say, like, it's about characters, and I know from watching the trailer that it's like more of like an adventure story, and that there's going to be additional seasons that'll come out for free after it, like down the line. But then there's a survival mode that is like open world survival, trying to just keep the character alive, and it's designed so that you should die after a certain point. But it there's cool stuff, like it takes itself like pretty seriously mechanically, where you are not only like you're worried about everything that you would think you'd be worried about, of like sleep, hunger. It literally has like a calorie counter that shows like how many calories you're running on right now. Having to keep yourself warm and like well rested and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of like you're going around and scavenging things, and I know lots of games do that these days, but it had a cool overall look to it, and I like, you know, this survival mode takes place in like a completely solitary snowy mountain, and I kind of dig that, and I want to try out that story mode for sure. So that's kind of all. I don't want to like say that much more about it until I put in more than 20 minutes.
We played a lot of Tekken together.
We Tekken'd. I've been playing so much Tekken, learning different characters. Like, since the last time we were talking about it, because we didn't talk about it last week, I got Brawler rank with Dragunov and Ling Xiaoyu, and I started playing Shaheen, and I'm trying to get Shaheen and Steve to Brawler rank. Maybe Brian next or something. It's still, like, a good game. It's still excellent, and it still like feels good. I guess like one of the things that we were talking about that kind of confuses me or like worries me a little bit is like it seems hard to make new characters for Tekken, because when they try, I feel like when they try and make characters that don't play by the Tekken rules, they screw it up, and they make characters that are like actually not fun to play against because they end up being very gimmicky, and you're spending more time learning the gimmicks than you are learning about the game. Like if you're going to be playing against like the main cast, you're playing against like Mishima's or Paul or Steve or you know, Jack, someone like that, like Brian, like there's plenty of characters that like have a similar concepts, and they can't move all over the place unless you're unbelievably good at Korean backdashing. And then you fight these characters like Alyssa or Eliza or Master Raven, where they're like teleporting and they don't follow the same rules. So you have to like learn more than the other characters, just like how to be really good at fighting them. Like how to just like, you probably need to like go in and learn their frame data and stuff. And if anything, it makes me more worried about like the future of the game. And I know Tekken's been going on for a long time and is the same game essentially that it's always been, but it's kind of weird to like be putting, I mean the future for me, where it's like I like a diverse cast, and it is weird thinking like I almost want the cast to be more similar, which would hurt and help it, because I don't like what they've done so far.
So
with
what
the very
do you want?
What?
You want it to be more diverse or more similar?
That's what I'm saying. It's like it's hard to say, because I on the outside and for the future's sake, it's like I want the game to have more diversity. Like I like the idea of characters that can be played in very vastly different ways that have tools that are unlike any other character. But they seem to do that by making these like really wacky anime characters that fly around a lot and do a lot of weird shit and have projectiles and stuff like that. And it's like, so when you're doing that, you're no longer playing Tekken. Now you're like it feels like you're doing something else and you're just fighting that character. You're just like in a simulation fighting that character. More than you are with like almost any of the other like 90% of the cast, where you can use the same kind of like learning the same kind of techniques and learn to fight them the way you can fight all the other ones, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part though, they still got to go in there and land a launcher.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I'm excited for DBZ Fighters. I'm excited for I'm increasingly excited for Marvel. I'm also kind of waiting for that because I think Marvel comes out in like September, which is ridiculous. Like, I don't even know if that can be true.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only things that I can see on the horizon are essentially Path of Exile can carry me to Destiny, and that can carry me for a very long time. But after that, I'm very excited for Super Mario. So it's very hard to think about all the things that might come out in between. Although I am excited for Absolver, which comes out at the end of August.
Oh yeah, that looks really good. That like freeformy fighting open worldy game where you like learn your own fighting style by using a fight deck.
So there's stuff. There's stuff to play. But at the same time, I'm just watching My Hero Academia. That's good. I recommend that.
I gotta watch more TV. I have not been watching TV.
You should watch My Hero Academia.
I you know what I did watch?
What's that?
A little thing that you might know by Kubo and the Two Strings.
That's a good movie, right?
That was a really good movie. It was really, really cute and really creative and has an awesome style. And I remember Sean was talking about it, but it does kind of shock me that I knew this going in too, that the whole thing is stop motion. It's not like CGI, like it's actual like clay stop motion and stuff. And that is like mind-boggling for how beautiful the movie is and how creative it gets. The fact that it's stop motion is like, that's nuts. They had to, that was a real like work of love, that movie.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw any of the like videos of how that stuff is put together, but it's pretty insane.
No, I should check that out.
There's videos floating around of some of the fight scenes, like against that giant skeleton thing, I think it was. Sounds familiar?
Yeah, that he gets the sword out of.
Yeah, so you can see how that was put together. It's pretty interesting.
Man, I'm gonna spend a lot of time on this Board Game Geek.
Massive, yeah, it's a good website.
Massive Darkness.
Kevin's been really into. He's been wanting to play this game called Twilight Imperium.
Is that a board game?
It's down the list. Yeah, Twilight Imperium, Shattered Empire. No, but it's just like this insane. Like it's pretty much like a 4X game. So imagine a game like Stellaris, but as a board game.
Yeah.
And that sort of tells you everything you need to know about Twilight Imperium. It's also like wildly expensive. I think it's like $100. And I don't know if I could ever like play that. Not just because of the cost or the time investment, because of like, how do you lay out so much stuff on a table?
Do you have Arkham Horror?
I do not. And I don't know if I
hear so much about that one.
I think that at this point, most people have moved to Eldritch Horror, which is like a sort of more simplified, fun version of Arkham Horror.
Is that also Cthulhu-y? It sounds like it.
Yes.
Cthulhu Wars. Man,
it's a very similar game.
Man, the Venn diagram with Cthulhu fans and board games is just a circle, actually. This game looks cool, though. Cthulhu War,
huh?
It kind of, not, I'm not to say I'm like the hugest HP Lovecraft fan out there, or even a huge fan to begin with of him, but it's kind of shitty to see so many companies riding that Eldritch wave where they don't, like, I think that there is really a type of game that should be like from the, you know, developed from the ground up to be very Cthulhu-y and be very insanity and randomness and scary and difficult. And I feel like it more and more.
What Arkham Horror kind of tries to be, though.
I mean, I'm not talking about Arkham Horror because I don't know anything about it.
Sure.
But
yeah.
But it's more like, you know, the game we just played, where it feels like they're just putting Cthulhu facades. They're putting a Cthulhu mask on top of something, and it's like, you know, they'll throw in, you know, your insanity mechanic and, you know, some elder gods and stuff, and it doesn't get much further than that. And it doesn't feel like, it feels like for really Cthulhu, it should be like figuring out stuff and espionage and creepy cultists that, like, you're having to deal with them and stay away from them and hiding and stealthing and, you know, like world altering, universe altering horrors and stuff. And not just like, we changed some of the icons to like a shambling horrors, and then also now you're gonna start rolling for sanity checks. So there you go. That's Cthulhu.
That Call of Cthulhu game looks all right, though.
There's another one coming out, because
yeah,
did you ever play the Call of Cthulhu Shadow? I think it was called Shadow over Innsmouth for Xbox.
I did not.
It was so good. It was like one of the best. I want to say it was one of those games that came out of the Eastern Bloc, where it's like they play completely different and look completely different than Western games. And it was a first person game where you're playing as a detective, and it was super creepy. And like, it nailed, you know, Cthulhu mythos kind of stuff, where you go into the beginning of it. There was this awesome setup where for a long time, there's no action at all. And you're in this town, and it's like kind of almost like Metro-y, where it's non, you know, like it's there's no action yet. And there is this really cool vibe that goes along with it, where all the townspeople really hate you and like secretly or not so secretly want to get you kicked out of the town. And they're all cultists, and they're like kind of fishmen when it eventually becomes revealed. And it's creepy, and it looks and plays great, and I feel like it nails Cthulhu stuff. I don't know anything about this other Call of Cthulhu, though. I remember hearing about that in the
2017 E3.
Yeah. Has there been anything on it?
No, just the trailer, I think. I haven't been following it closely. I always have when games come out of E3, unless they're, like, immediate, I don't usually tend to follow them.
Yeah.
Unless they're called Super Mario Odyssey. Huh?
Because why would you, right? Does that have a date yet?
I think so. Yeah, let me see. Super Mario Odyssey, release date, October 27th.
Neat. That's not as far away as I would have thought. I would have thought that would be more like November-y, December-y.
That E3 trailer was pretty good. I don't know if you saw it.
I did. You throw a hat on things. Throw a hat on a hot dog, and then the hot dog is you.
Throw a hat on a dinosaur.
What's the place? Big Donk City?
New Donk City.
Cheese and rice. Who did that? Patch that out.
That's an awesome name. You're crazy.
New Donk?
It's so funny.
New Donk.
You just don't appreciate Donk memes.
Oh, Christ.
So what's left for video games?
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about Dead Cells. It seems weird to me that I played a game where I liked it so much that I stopped playing it.
Yeah. What you mean.
It is like, I didn't want it to be ruined the way that I felt like Darkest Dungeon kind of got ruined, where I spent a lot of my time playing it in an unfinished state, and then there weren't enough changes, and there's other stuff coming out. So when Darkest Dungeon launched, it's like, I'm busy with other stuff, and I already know the gist of Darkest Dungeon, so even like slight changes aren't going to be enough. But that's,
with early access, it's weird. They do keep putting updates into it, which is cool. They just put out another update last week, which added daily missions to it or daily runs. So that's kind of cool. I feel like the early access model makes a lot more sense for a sort of like these multiplayer games. I feel like it works really well for PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, because it's sort of fun to see the game develop, and it's a game where you're always going to be repeating it anyway, because that's the nature of multiplayer games. So I feel like it kind of works out better for that. And it seems like people have been really happy with the updates that are coming out with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
What about that loot crate, the chest and keys?
It's already been redacted and solved, I believe. Everyone's happy again.
Redacted,
they announced
how so?
That there will be they're releasing two new crates instead, and they're going to be not going to be any key situation. You're going to get them and you can open them and that's it.
Man,
so essentially
keys
were
never good. That problem was before they solved that problem that they created, that problem had already been solved.
Was it? Because I feel like everyone still has that in games that had keys. Still have keys. Like,
no, I think they got rid of them in Dota and CSGO, I want to say.
What about League of Legends?
I mean, man, those keys suck.
Those suck.
But the difference is, like, you're not buying the keys. You create the keys.
And also the chests in League of Legends are pretty rewarding by comparison. And they're easy to get. And they're not random.
Are they rewarding? Because you get a thing and then you have to use resources to unlock the thing you got. Like, don't you not
but
get
it's already
it?
It's already so easy to unlock stuff in League of Legends, and it gives you a free way to get skins. Which, to be fair, other games like Heroes of the Storm already have, but for League of Legends, I still think it's all right.
For Heroes of the Storm, it's pretty easy as shit to unlock stuff. If you really, if I want something, I can get it.
Probably the most generous
yeah.
of all the free-to-play games.
Especially now, it feels like it's really easy to get a lot of experience and a lot of gold really quickly.
At 2.0. You know, one of the craziest things for Path of Exile is that, like, when the new league drops, they also drop new microtransactions, and I'm pretty excited for some of those. Because the theme of the Harbinger League is, like, pretty cool. It's, like, a pretty slick style.
Can you say it in a word?
It's blue. It's very blue.
The theme is blue.
Well, to be fair, the last couple of expansions, the theme was purple. So now the theme is blue. And everyone's like, oh shit, we're moving to blue. A different color. Because both Breach and Prophecy were purple.
Purple is way higher rated in Tekken. Those. And in loot games, purple is much better.
Yeah, but one of the cool things about the new Harbinger League is that enemies, like the end game enemies in Harbinger, drop shards of items, and you could get like four different shards, and the way in which you arrange them in your inventory when you seal them determines what you get. So if you arrange, depending on how you set them up, you could have these four shards that could be two or three different items, depending on how you lay them out. And it's kind of cool that you get that choice on what you want to craft it into.
I have so few metrics to understand Path of Exile.
It's got some systems.
And I will try and understand the systems by next
I'm worried for you, because I'm worried that you're not going to know what kind of character you want to play, and you're going to try to wing it, and you're going to not like the game. That's my worry.
I think that's a very good worry to have. But also, like, I don't want to go into the game having a super thought out thing, because I don't know what the builds are.
That's true, but the way the Path of Exile works is that, like, it's a game that sort of does require like some learning and some practice,
some pre planning and stuff. Because, you know, like with other, I think of it as a weird. It's like a weird. Deterrent for me being interested in the game, just the fact that I can't just like level up and then see what I'm kind of like getting into and like what I'm getting interested in, and it's like I have to from second one plan to like perfect this character.
Well, it's not that, but you do have to think about like what kind of damage you want to deal and what your defenses are going to be, and that's the only thing that you really have to have figured out from the very beginning. Because
okay.
for example, like if you wanted to play a Shadow, who is like the sort of like a rogue character, the tree starts out where you can choose either elemental damage or physical damage. And that's kind of a big deal, making that one choice. And it's a deal. It's not something that you can't go back on later, but it would be kind of cumbersome. I mean, there is the ability to respec parts of your tree, but it's good to know what kind of damage you want to deal and what kind of defense you want to use. It's also kind of good to understand what the different subclasses are in the game, because yeah. like knowing what different subclasses are, you could figure out like you wouldn't want to build, let's say, a shadow and then decide you want to be a summoner, because the best summoner is the witch, because she can be a necromancer, which has really good summoning abilities.
Man,
or
I just,
let's say you end up liking bows a lot, and then you wish you were a ranger, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Fair enough. I guess I'll look into the subclasses and see what I'm feeling.
But if you can find like an idea of like, I would like a character that plays like this, I could probably recommend you builds that do things like what you want to do. And I could probably give you like a bunch of different ones that point towards that. So far, I have two builds that I'm definitely going to play, but I have four builds like in my reserve. I'm ready to go.
I can tell.
We spent way too much time talking about video games this week, huh?
I thought that exact thing. I don't know. We did it too fast, didn't we?
We need more filler.
See, you don't start off. See, that I messaged to my. That's my bad, because I got into it right away. You said, "What's the deal with games?" And I was some sort of triggered.
And now we know the deal with games, and now we're at an impasse.
I think you just bring us home. We got good stuff next week.
Oh man, are you sure?
Yeah.
All I'm going to talk about is Path of Exile.
Yeah.
This has been The Deal with Games. You can find us online at WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDGpodcast, or on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
Thank you again, Ryan Calloway and Crowling, for the use of your music. We use the intro and the outro, Revive, off the new album Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at their own Forever Bandcamp. And I am Ryan.
I'm James. Good night.
Baby Makes Three.